Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 42. We are covering the Northern Trust Open on the PGA Tour and the D&D Real Czech Masters on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams, who is in his Guernsey tax haven tonight, and resident podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good evening, chaps.
Evening, chaps.
Evening, guys.
Right, golfbettingsystem.co.uk. Let's go through the Twitter handles. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on everything you want to really listen through. So Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Player FM, Podtail. We're now on Stitcher. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast and spread the word. Just also, if you could take a few seconds to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be hugely appreciated. We're now up to 11 ratings on iTunes and we've got an average score of 4.5. Really, really appreciate all of that feedback and the time that you've put into that, listeners. Of course, all of these subscription numbers, followers, ratings on iTunes, it all adds up in terms of helping us to keep all of our content free at Golf Betting System. So welcome to the show, everybody. Now, we're going to do things slightly different this week. Paul is actually on his holiday this week. He's out in Guernsey. That is correct. He's not in his tax haven, I think. So what we're going to do, we're going to go through a little bit of we'll go through a little bit of what happened last week. We're then going to talk D&D Real Czech Masters with Paul. Paul will then disappear, and then Barry and I are going to go through the Northern Trust Open, which is the start of the 2018 FedEx Cup playoffs, which is always something to really look forward to. So, another winner last week, guys.
Well done, Steve.
Grant Snedeker.
Boys on fire.
I must say, to get two winners in consecutive weeks is a very hard thing to do. I think I did it once in 2012. I did it 2016. Well, it might have been 17 last year, and now to have done it this year.
Yeah, it's really good.
So yeah, it's all good.
Must be very pleasing.
Well, it gives you actually add up our betting previews across 2018, Paul. This is yours and mine combined. We're over 200 points up.
Yes, looking good
across European Tour PGA Tour.
Closing in on last year's total, which was about 320.
And the other thing is, that's by the by. You then throw in this podcast and you throw in all the stuff that we get from Barry. We've actually, as you know, we keep saying this, we've had, across the podcast, we've had three of the four major champions this year. Why wouldn't you listen to this podcast? Why wouldn't you listen to it? It's just packed full of winners, eh, Barry?
We're doing okay. I can't really complain.
I know you. You've already told me you've got the winner this week over in New York, so that's good.
Yeah, I was happy to get a place on Lucas Herbert last week. So
yeah, it's a good shout.
Yeah, good shout. Out okay.
Yeah, no, he played well, didn't he? I'm not that I saw any of the live action because I was out here, but just reading between the lines, he did what you expected, which was got you a nice each way return.
I watched a lot of that. It was a tough golf course, wasn't it, Barry? It was gnarly.
I saw
wasn't
bits
it?
And pieces of it. Yeah, it looked like a serious test, all right. And I was out golfing at the time, so I wasn't really looking at the leaderboard. Came in and just saw where he finished. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then went and had a look at the scorecard. He finished like a train. So it would have been more fun to have watched in real time. But I'll just take the result as it came. Come here. I wanted to ask one thing. Is the CT Pan voodoo doll you were spiking last night, is it intact or is it completely disintegrated?
I was mumbling under my voice watching it on Sunday. The wife and child were well in bed. And I was going, I can't believe Snedeker's going to fuck this up. And I was in as much of a rage and a sweat as he was. As he was, as his kind of approach game was going all over the place.
That was seriously impressive.
I thought to myself, this pan, he just will not go away. But he created so many chances on that back nine and couldn't convert the putts. And I just thought in the back of my mind, knowing what we kind of knew about the champion Bermuda grass angle, the angle that Snedeker hadn't won for a period of time and was a quality player, you just got the feeling that if something, he was grinding, but they were dead level, weren't they? And then I never expected it, but when that ball started veering right, I did have a chuckle, I have to say.
Veering? That thing went straight right. It was like a shank with the driver. Do you know what was it was unfortunate that it happened. I thought his reaction to it was phenomenal. I mean, beyond any expectations. Like, for somebody that young who hasn't won, to be so calm and collected and just kind of go, you know what, I'm just going to learn from it. I thought it was... that's a mark of somebody who will take that on board and will use it to his advantage. And he's a very talented player. I can definitely see him winning soon. Maybe the playoff events might be a bit big for him, but you never know. Early start of the early events for next season.
Yeah, definitely. For memory, he's an ex-world amateur number one, isn't he, Pan? And he's basically all of his development as a golfer was in America. I think he was Florida based from memory. So he's a quality player. But I always, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? And Paul, we all have these discussions about where you put these players. And for me, I've never seen him shoot, you know, a low total. He's always been one of those guys that grinds in a more technical kind of tournament. But all of a sudden, for him to shoot that 18 under, he was 20 under, wasn't he, going into the final hole? That opens up a whole new category of courses for him, doesn't it? Where it's sure accuracy pays off. You know, you could see him going very well around somewhere like Harbortown. Yeah. The other thing with him was, I think, you know, that champion Bermuda grass link we were talking about. He finished in the top 20 at TPC Southwind this season. But I think he was either, he could have even been the 36 hole. He was either the leader or second or third after 36 holes. Down in Memphis.
Yeah.
So even there with him, you could see he was comfortable in the champion.
Yeah, 67, he played beautifully. 67, 65 he started that week, so he'd have been there or thereabouts. Snedeker sort 62, didn't he? So yeah, there's clearly a strong link there, isn't there, as you'd kind of identified from the preview. So
The angle of going with three South Koreans, that backfired as badly as we knew it was going to last week. So even when I was writing it last week, I'm thinking this is a recipe for total and utter disaster.
Miss Cussie.
And sure enough, it was. Siwoo Kim came 143rd, I think it was. But anyway, you can laugh at it, can't you?
You can when you picked up the winner of one of your other. Out of your headline tips, yeah, all good.
What do we? Yeah, well, yeah, it's all good. What do we think in terms of Torbjörn and what he did last week over in Sweden, and how that now relates to this captain's pick scenario? Because from what I'm reading, if one of either Casey Poulter or Cabrero Bello get in the top 12 or 14 this week, they get back into that automatic spot. Yes. It's very, very tight.
So he's in the last spot at the moment, isn't he? He's up to eighth.
He is at the moment, yeah.
That was super impressive. Like but it shows, like, he obviously just, you know, refocuses him, gives him extra determination to play well, and he just kind of forgets about the whole club, I don't know, disaster. I mean, how could you lose two sets of clubs? But That shows a lot of bottle and metal, and I think that really, if he wasn't in Bjorn's mind for a captain's pick, that's pushed him right up there, assuming he doesn't make the top eight, or if he doesn't make the top eight.
What about Sergio?
I don't know. What is up with him? Like, I mean, he got himself into the right positions and was still sulking. It was like watching Sergio pre-Masters. You know, before the Masters win, just like moping around, woe is me, instead of just kind of trying to play with a bit of, I don't know, attitude, swagger, a smile, good vibes. It's like he's expecting catastrophe to happen. It's not a good mental place to be in.
Well, that's him done now, isn't it? When we looked this time last week,
he's done in America.
Yeah. Well, when we looked this time last week, Steve, he was entered into both this event in the Czech Republic and the Danish event next week, and he's no longer entered into this week. We'll have to check and see if he's still in next week, but I suspect not. Looks like he's called it a day. Now, is that because he's been given the nod, or is that because he's literally called it a day?
Yeah.
That's from my perspective, and it means absolutely nothing. That, to me, is bad. I think if you really want to get in a Ryder Cup squad and you're having the season you're having, you'd come across and you'd definitely play Made in Denmark next week. Because there would be him, Olsen and Peters.
Well, Eddie Pepple's there.
They're all going to be playing.
Pepple's sitting in 11th spot at the moment, and he's playing this week over in the Czech Republic. He goes and wins that tournament. Where's that put him? You know, it's tightening it all up again. You know, clearly the guys over in America have got some big opportunities with the events that are coming up there as well. But
they showed a graphic on the golf last night on Sky TV, and I don't know why, but I was taken aback a little bit about the amount of the players who have qualified already that haven't played the Ryder Cup. Yeah. So there's no doubt about their quality. Yeah, but you know, Tyrrell Hatton hasn't played. Tommy Fleetwood hasn't played. Now, and you don't think of them in that ilk, do you? You think of them as world-class elite players, which they are. But they haven't played Ryder Cup golf.
I think they did make a good point, though, and I tend to agree with it, that you know, the being a rookie these days is not the same as being a rookie, say, 12, 14 years ago. These guys are playing in enormous events at very high levels, you know, competing for majors, WGCs, and just big titles on the PGA Tour, whereas, you know, a European team with a few rookies, you know, 10 years ago, those guys wouldn't have been playing on the PGA Tour as much and wouldn't have had as much experience at a very high level. Whereas these days, like, I mean, I think whatever first tee or flutters or nerves they might have early on in the event, I think they'll be gone after a hole or two and they'll just settle right into it. I hope, at least, you know, because otherwise with that many rookies... And if it goes badly against you, it could go very badly against Europe.
For me, Stenson's a lock. And I think you might see him bounce back. I was tempted to tip him up this week. I haven't. He just isn't quite showing enough for me. And he has got a decent record around New York. So I could see him coming into the mix this week. He knows he needs to deliver something just to get that forward momentum going. He's also outside the top 30 in the FedEx Cup, so if he wants to get to the Tour Championship, he needs to step up at some point. So I can see Stenson undoubtedly being in the team. I'm not 100% certain about Garcia or Casey. I think Torbjörn gets a captain's pick. I think Ian Poulter would get a captain's pick if he isn't automatic. And I've still got a sneaky feeling, you know, that Thomas Peters, after that PGA Championship and what we saw him do 2 years ago to be top point scorer, I'm pretty certain in my mind that he gets a captain's pick.
Do you think?
Yeah, I'm pretty certain. I mean, I wouldn't. It's up to Paul, of course, but I know his price this week is crazily short. But I can just see him either, you know, doing almost what he did 2 years ago, where he finished second and then first.
He's almost got to go win-win.
He has to do something of that ilk, but I can see it.
I agree. He needs to continue to do something. One swallow does not a summer make. You know,
No. Understand that. But if he was to win this week, or was to finish second, and then goes and wins next week, or something like that. I mean, a guy that was top point scorer 2 years ago, who is finding the form. Whereas Sergio is walking around like a, you know, wet lettuce, oh woe is me, who would you pick?
That's a tough one. As Barry said, if the question comes down to experience, then you might want to, you might want to, you know, well, should we say level heads?
Keimer was experienced 2 years ago. He didn't get a point, did he? This is the whole point. If you're out of Nick, you're out of Nick.
Yeah,
well,
true.
Thomas Peters has been out of Nick most of the season. It's only recently that he's started to find some form. But yeah, as you say, he wins this week, he wins next week. You know, it does ask some questions.
I agree. You've got to give credit to the Americans, though, and the way that they pick their team. Don't forget they're doing the same again this year, so they're going to get picked three after the Boston event, and then they're going to save the final one until after the BMW event. Mm. And don't forget Ryan Moore 2 years ago. You wouldn't have picked him at this stage, would you? And all of a sudden, he started playing the golf from the gods and he got the final captain's pick. You know, that is something that they used to their advantage 2 years ago. If we do get a player that's playing that well, and it could be Thomas Peters, I think we do exactly the same.
It was encouraging that he actually got that pick as well, because that kind of validated the process. Had he gone through that and played as well as he'd done and finished as well as he'd done, and not got the pick on the, off the back of it, it kind of, you know, it almost nullified that decision to leave that pick so late. So
pointless, yeah, absolutely. Right then, that's enough of that. Take us through the real Czech Masters, Paul.
Yeah, so this is the D&D Real Czech Masters, which is played over at the Albatross course, just outside of Prague. It's been played there. This is the fifth year, actually. So they started in 2014, 14, 15, 16, 17, and then obviously this will be the fifth. It's a 7,000, I'll get the right side of my paper and I'll be able to read what I've said, 7,467-yard par 72. Slightly at altitude, it's about 400 metres or so above sea level, so you do get a slight differential here. And whilst it's not massive, it does ask players a little question about how they're going to calculate their distances with their tee shots and their irons. So well worth considering that with your research that you do for this. It's 7.74, so it's quite long on paper, slightly negated a bit with the altitude. You've got two reachable, reasonably lengthy par fives, and you've got two back-to-back par fives around the turn, which are, each of them are over 600 yards. So whilst par five scoring is particularly important, it isn't just a, you know, it's not a birdie fest on these par fives. You've got a couple of shortish par fours as well. The sixth is the most logical one, which the longer hitters can just about get the front edge of that. And in fact, the way the course is set up, you find that the front six holes are the easiest. By the time you get to the front nine, front 12, in fact, after that point, it starts to get particularly tough. You've got lots of water around. Relatively wide, though, big bent grass greens. One of these kind of exposed tracks that you can attack if you're a long hitter who can hit fairways. And if you go back 12 months... this is the event that I picked up Hayden Porteous at last year at 66s. Yeah, the logic that week, I mean, he came into the event in terms of his course form, he finished 60th and missed cut. So he'd kind of been priced out of it by the bookies on the back of his poor form around it. But digging into where he got to last year as he approached this, and Porteous is one of those players who's he's quite inconsistent. He's a lot of miscuts in there, and coming into his kind of pre-event form for this, a lot of miscuts, a lot of kind of 30th, 40th place finishes. Went back home to South Africa, finished 11th, I think it was, at Cape Town, one of those small South African Sunshine Tour events. And then finished sixth the week before at what was next week's event this time last year, the Made in Denmark. And then from there, promptly went and won. Now, if you dig, when I dug through the stats for this last year, what really stood out to me with Porteous is that his total driving just took an absolute step change. From when he went back to South Africa, played at Sun City, he'd been striking the ball poorly, suddenly found something with his long game, hitting fairways, hitting greens, hitting the ball an absolute mile, which is what he does anyway. He carried that through, and in the end he won by a couple of strokes here. And I've looked at the way that the forecast panned out, and historically the forecast has been, when it's been relatively damp, or when it's been soft, or when it's been playable and scoreable, you've been able to get close to kind of 18, 20 under it. Last year it was 13 under. And that was driven mainly by the fact that after a dry, relatively straightforward Thursday, the weather deteriorated a bit, it got a lot colder, got a little bit breezier, and it really played into the hands of the longer hitters because the ball wasn't flying as far. And looking at the forecast this week, it's almost a carbon copy. It's almost absolutely identical. So we're going into Thursday, you've got 90-degree temperatures, sunshine. And then you've got the potential for some storms coming on Friday, which could soften the course, certainly if they get the rain that's forecast to accompany it. And then you're going to see the temperatures drop into the weekend from kind of 90 degrees down to 65, 70. So for me, it's going to play very, very similar to last year.
Okay.
And, you know, if that's the case, you're likely to end up with either a similar kind of cast or a similar kind of players in those positions, I think.
I've got to say, I'm loving the field. Peters, Pepperell, Willett, Wallace, Westwood, Burmester, Beef, Soren Kjeldsen. You know, it's a decent field, isn't it? Slattery, Herbert, Lucas, Variety, Scott Henn. You know, you can't complain for a European Tour event, which isn't overly prestigious. That's a decent field.
Yeah, no, and for one that hasn't got a particularly big prize fund yet. Mm. But then the flip side of it, Steve, is that you've got this week and next with the Ryder Cup qualification. And who have you got here that's realistically in with a chance of... Yeah. You could argue that mathematically the likes of Pepperell still could get through and get an automatic spot, but you know these guys really, if they're doing anything, they're putting their hands up and trying to be counted for a captain's pick, aren't they?
You'd have to excuse my negligence here. Negligence, probably not the right word. Ignorance, maybe. Is Westwood a vice captain this year?
Yeah.
Do you reckon that's why he's playing then? Just keeping an eye on things.
Today he picks and chooses what he wants to play nowadays, doesn't he?
But, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, you know.
He's actually been playing some half-decent golf, hasn't he, Westwood? In spots, here and there.
So we're looking for good total drivers at the moment?
Yeah, that's kind of where I've gone with this. And I think if you've got someone who's driving the ball well, hitting fairways and driving, you know, really putting the ball out there, then that's one of the ways that you're going to be able to get this, you know, kind of tame this albatross course. And you know, you said right at the top of the show, you know, Thomas Peters, you know, in this field, it's difficult to argue that, you know, he's undoubtedly should be favourite. He is the clear favourite. You know, the best you're getting out there is 8-1. Should he win this tournament? Well, he's won it before. He could have easily won it second time when Paul Peterson pipped him. But you're looking at 8-1. That won't be there very long. In fact, by the time this podcast's up, there won't be any 8-1 left. It'll be 7s, kind of 13-2, that kind of bracket. And then you're into the likes of Pepperell. You know, there's a lot of weight on Pepperell's shoulders, and you know Eddie plays when Eddie wants to play, and you kind of tell from, you know, his musings on Twitter that half the time actually he can't be arsed. Half the time he's fully focused and really wants to get involved and. You know, which Eddie's going to turn up. You know, there's a big carrot out there for him if he can't, you know, if there's a focused Eddie that turns up this week. But, you know, 16-18-1, that's a pretty skinny price. And then into the likes of Danny Willett. I mean, Willett is certainly rounding into some form. You know, you could argue that he's going to, you know, really start to contend in these events soon enough. Of the players at the top end, and I've backed three further down the field, which I'll go through.
You're going to pick Matt Wallace.
I've backed three further down the field, but if I had one from the top, it will be Matt Wallace. And when we've finished this,
we've been doing this far too long.
You just read my mind.
Okay.
Because I think if you've got someone who's proven as a winner, you know. I forget what the ratio is that we've, you know, for his wins, but he's verging on kind of 10% conversion rate. Yes, he's not being, you know, he's missed a few cuts since his last win, but then what was he, top 20 at the USPGA?
Yeah, he was exceptional.
Yeah, absolutely. Really enjoyed himself. Absolutely loved it. You know, I followed a lot of his comments on Twitter. Absolutely had the time of his life out there. You know, 28-1 you're getting out there. And he may not win. Thomas Peters may win this. And if you're going to go each way on one of the guys near the top, then there's a pretty fair chance that someone like Matt Wallace could actually get that, you know, one of those top five, top six positions, depending on who you bet with. And even if he doesn't win, you're going to get a decent enough return out of that. I just need to make my mind up now if I'm going to back him or not at that price. But yeah, if there's one at the top, because I'm looking down, Westwood, I can't back him. Dean Burmester. It's a bit too flaky for me. Beef, I don't think he's quite long enough for it. Kjeldsen's not long enough for this. Slattery's not long enough for it. Lucas Herbert, yeah, you know, again, we could go for, you know, trying to get a back-to-back result out of Lucas, but you know, these younger players, they often don't produce those back-to-back player weeks. You know, it's 1 week and then it's kind of, you know, oblivion again for a couple of weeks, and then they'll pop up 3 or 4 weeks later with another contending performance. Scott Hendel,
I'll help you out. 9 wins since September 2015.
Yep.
Of course, a lot of them win.
Yeah, absolutely, and that'll be.
But that, I mean, that works nicely because I know that you've always said he's got a decent record over in mainland Europe.
Yep. Absolutely, and you know.
So that's That's a 13.2% win rate, or a 27% top five rate.
It's absolutely phenomenal, isn't it? And he's, you know, he's not the shortest by any stretch. You know, he's, I think he's sitting around about 50th or thereabouts on the European tour. Driving distance stats, you can put it out. He's not stupidly long, but he's certainly not short. And he knows how to get the job done. If there's a guy at the top, he will be the one that I put in there. I think the three that I have backed, I've gone for Hayden Porteous to go back to back, and I don't tend to back the defending champion, but everything seems to add up to him this week. Conditions are going to be almost identical. He's been poor again over the season, then he's rounded into some form. He finished 6th last week, which is exactly what he did prior to his win last year. And if you dig into his stats from last week, he was first for ball striking, first for total driving, first for all round. He found his form, found his game last week. And, you know, if there's something, you know, we've talked about biorhythms, we've talked about, you know, players who, you know, for whatever reason, something mentally just clicks and they, you know, they're back in their, you know, back in their comfort zone. At 50-1, I thought that was a fair price to take on the defending champion there. Given that, you know,
who did Xander Lombard win last
week?
Yeah,
he did
out in South Africa.
Yeah. So yeah, it could be this kind of South African bounce to a degree. The other thing with Porteous, the other time that he attempted to defend, which the first title he won was the Joburg Open back in 2016, I think it was. So when he came to defend the year after, it's one of these massively impacted by the weather events. It cut down to 54 holes in the end. But he was 5th going into the final, or the third round, so that's the final day. So he put himself right in the mix. Didn't convert, but he didn't turn up and, you know, just roll over as the defending champion. He put in a decent shift. He'll have learned a lot from that. Again, he's still a young lad. I think the conditions and the course and everything is going to set up. It's going to feel like it did last year to him. He's coming in off the back of a very similar effort to how he did last year. You know, in his own mind, it could almost be like deja vu. So yeah, I thought 50-1 was worth taking on. The other two I backed, the Frenchman Mathieu Pavon, and again I've backed him relatively recently. But he was the guy who finished top Frenchman at the US Open, finished 25th overall. And again, he's another one of these players who's long. He's well capable of hitting the fairways, hitting the greens that I think are going to be required here. The thing that really caught my eye with him, and he is generally a ball striker, is that he produced his best putting performance that I've ever seen on record for him last week, 1.59 putts per greens in regulation. So he has found something with the putter. If he can couple that with a decent tee to green week, then I don't see any reason why he can't contend either. You know, he's done well in decent opposition. US Open, clearly there's world class opposition there, but he led the Irish Open after 2 days, eventually finished 10th. He started the Scottish Open reasonably well the week after. He started with 66 last week. There's a bit of form there, I think, and at 66-1, I thought that was worth taking on too.
Am I right in seeing that the Panda's playing this week? He's flown over from the US.
The Panda?
Doug Gibb.
He did. I saw his name there, yeah.
Yeah. Love it. That did make me think, actually, because you got the likes of him, and of course we've got the Wunderkind, who now can't play in the United States. It'd be nice to see him fly over and play some European Tour events.
Yeah, there's no reason why not, is there?
No, absolutely. That'd be good to see.
They're going to get an invite if they're not got any other eligibility criteria.
Because otherwise, he can't play until Silverado in the full, as they classify it. So, you know, why wouldn't you fly over to the European Tour and play some decent events over here?
Get some golfing, see a new part of the world.
Who are you going for then in your final pick?
The final one, I did kind of go around the houses a little bit with this, but I've gone for JC Ritchie, the South African. And I don't know a great deal about him, I must say. I've just been caught by his stats, by his recent form. He's one of these guys that's, you know, relatively under the radar from a European Tour perspective. But if you dig into his Sunshine Tour history, he's got a couple of wins out of 92 starts. He plays out of the Copperleaf Club, the Els Club, which is one of these long tracks at altitude. You know, again, there's some correlation there, I think you'll find. And he's really started to round into some form this year. He's up over, around about 400 spots in the world rankings, up to about 200 now. Finished first and third in his last two starts over the last fortnight on the Sunshine Tour. And statistically, he fits very nicely. He's another long player, he's another accurate player. His total driving is very, very strong. He's, if you look at his total driving over his last five starts on the Sunshine Tour, he's ranked in the top five for each of those five events. So he's very consistent, very strong from tee to green. Now, you could argue again, you know, is he going to be able to replicate this on the European Tour? But if you dig into what he's done this season, he's played twice on these co-sanctioned Sunshine Tour European Tour events, and he finished third at the South African Open, 65-65 over the weekend, so that was impressive. And in 13th at the Swanee Open as well. And he shot a third round 74 there. Without that, he would have been right in the mix there as well. He kind of bookended that with 67s and 68s either side, and it was just this Saturday that let him down. So he doesn't seem to be overawed at the European Tour level, and he's got a game that fits very nicely. And I got a bit of 100 to 1 about him earlier. There's some disparity again between the bookies here, between those going around about 50s, and there's 100 to 1 out there on him. And
50 to 1, yeah, 50 to 1, six places, and then you get Unibet, who they love to do this, don't they? They're just hanging 100 to 1 out there, six places.
Big difference.
I'm sure he'll love the delights of Prague, and he might play some good golf as well.
Yeah, again, if you look back at Porteous have won Joburg Open. You know, clearly had some altitude form in his book from previous. I don't think it feels that different to it. You know, they're walking around a big open track that's got bent grass greens. It's a little bit altitude. I expect the South Africans look at this and think, actually, you know, this looks a bit like home, really. It feels a bit like home. Those are the three I've backed. I'm going to make a quick decision now whether to go in my brain.
Matt Wallace,
that's the one. Yeah, he's the guy.
Matt, you've got to put Matt in. Go on.
Did you see him on Sky Sports last night? He was there.
No, yeah,
he was there, wasn't he? Yeah, he was.
I've been looking at his Twitter, and clearly he was on there. How did that go? Did you see it?
I just, the things he was saying, he's eager to put his hand up and just try get noticed by Bjorn. So he's added this to his schedule. So it's there. That immediately says motivated and focused for the week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on then, he's in. Right, he'll be my fourth. I'm going to write him up now.
Go on, how can it possibly go wrong?
And if it does go wrong, Steve will reimburse you.
just blame Barry.
I'll be back in the 28th in a second, and then that'll be my
again,
fourth.
Unibet price.
There's some cracking prices from Unibet right now.
They really are doing well on some of these prices. 28 to 1, Matt Wallace with Unibet, six places, and you're not finding him anywhere better, even with five places. Anything better than 22 to 1?
Strong, isn't it?
So yeah, they're hanging some very tempting prices out there. Unibet at the moment.
Yes.
I'm on one with my tournament with Unibet, which again is a silly price. So yes. All right. Any interest from you, Barry, in this one?
Well, the only way I could have been happier about my first pick is if you were ripping on him instead of Paul, Steve. Paul said he doesn't like people going back to back, but he's riding the Hayden Porteous angle. So I'm putting up my Lucas Herbert against your Hayden Porteous. You know, he showed some very good form recently, very progressive form. 51st, 29th, 18th, 5th. stats last week were pretty solid across the board. His driving accuracy is not his, you know, not his best thing, but the fairways here are a bit wider this week.
Yeah.
You know, top 30 for greens and regulation last week. Decent on the putting. So, you know, solid across the board. And, you know, it fits into Steve's thought about players that finish fast the week before going well the week after. And he finished 6 under for his last 7 holes.
What's his status? Because they were mentioning it in the coverage on Saturday about he needed a top 10 or something.
Well, maybe for Dubai. He should be well and truly clear in terms of his card.
He's well in the 110, yeah?
Let me just check. But given the finishes that he's had this season, I really can't believe that he's anywhere.
But based on that fast finish, Barry, and the fact that we're talking about someone that can drive the golf ball a long way, Herbert must fit into that like a house on fire.
Okay, no, he's sitting at 98th, so he's not exactly home and hosed. You know, probably needs a little bit.
He's trending nicely, so I'm in. I've already backed him. I got him at 33-1, so I know it's half the price, or just a little bit above half the price I got him at last week, but I'm playing with house money on him, so this is great. I've got one other bet. He finished in the top, inside, tied 13th last week, hits the ball a mile, reasonably accurate off the tee, so that'll help him this week as well with the extra wide fairways. Top 12 for greens in regulation. His putting could do with maybe just eking out like a, you know, 3/4 of a stroke to a stroke extra better per round. But if he does that, he'll really contend this week. And I jumped on him at 125-1 with Betfair. It's Sebastian Gross.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one that was on my early shortlist, I must say. The only thing that concerns me is he could be a great first round leader type bet where he can get off to a start. Whether he can stick around for the full 4 days.
Well, he's fringe.
Yeah, that remains to be seen.
Barry, go first round leader.
Go first round. Okay, I'll add first round leader and win on him twice then.
You could win on him twice.
I can't take your ramblings if he ends up first round leader on Thursday and then he starts shooting 79 on the Friday. So just back him first round leader.
There is a block feature on WhatsApp or a mute.
Yeah. Yeah, a mute feature.
Well, interestingly, he started 71 last week, but then went 64, 69, 69. So maybe there's a case to back him for a leader of each round. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, look, I'm dead happy with the 125-1. It's a nice price. So let's see how it goes.
What can you tell me before you disappear, Paul, about Christopher Blomstrand? Because I keep seeing his name near the top of leaderboards.
Yeah, he has been playing.
Is he a long, powerful sort, or is he a Jim Furyk sort?
I've not seen a great deal of him, I must say. Let's have a look at his recent stats.
He was there or thereabouts last week, wasn't he? I kept seeing his name.
Yeah, just look at his last couple of starts. 290-ish driver there or thereabouts. Not particularly accurate. Hits a fair amount of greens by the looks of it. It's all pretty middling. There's nothing massive there. But as you say, you know, he's done well recently. He finished second at the Porsche. And for a while, he was in contention. I certainly saw him pop up on some of the leaderboards I looked at last week. 8th at the Joburg Open earlier, that were back end of last year as well, which, again, if you're kind of getting any correlation with the Johannesburg-based events, altitude events, then you know you could infer something from that, I guess.
Okay. When can we expect your published ramblings?
I'll crack on with that now. So I suspect by 7:30 PM BST on Monday, yeah, there or thereabouts.
So when this is released, listeners, Paul's full preview will be available.
Barring some kind of massive technical hitch that I encounter now when I log off, it should all be good.
Have you got a final message for Paul, Barry, before he disappears?
I don't know. Save some of the tax-free money for me.
if there's any left, Barry.
Are you enjoying the Guernsey? What's the Guernsey beverages like, or the what's the food like out there? Is there a French twist?
There is a French
there,
twist to all of it. Yeah, it's very French influenced. Not necessarily the food, very but nice. The whole kind of locality. I tell you the thing that I've driven over here, so I've got the car. The thing that really threw me is that...
You might want to explain that. You haven't driven all the way over.
But no, I did.
Because that would really need something quite...
Yeah, there was a ferry involved at one point. The thing that threw me is that they have these filter junctions rather than mini roundabouts here, which if you've never, and I've never encountered a filter junction before... So you come to this filter junction, which is like a yellow box junction that you'd expect there to be either a crossroads or a mini roundabout or something that was actually telling you who's got the right of way. And there's none of it. There's just these yellow hatched markings on the ground. And you kind of just have to eyeball the other drivers who are coming to the same junction at the same time and try and agree between yourselves who's got the right of way, which takes a little bit of getting used to, but... I think I've almost got the hang of it now without crashing the car, which is good.
If we've got any Guernsey listeners, tweet at Golf Betting. He might meet up with you for a beverage.
Yeah, if I've not smashed the car up by that point.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Best of luck for your punts this week. And
cheers, best of luck for you. I'm sure Matt Wallace will bring home the bacon for you.
Fingers crossed. Good stuff.
Sayonara.
Take care, guys. Speak to you next
week. Take care.
Cheers. All the best.
Cheers. Bye bye. So it's you and me, Barry.
Yeah, the gruesome twosome.
Are we safe?
Let's go for it. Tell us.
I must say, I am rather looking forward to the Northern Trust. Yeah. I do like the FedEx Cup playoffs. Do you?
They're great. They just pull together an elite field in a situation where you shouldn't have this many quality players together. You'd ordinarily only see it in a major, so it's like an extra treat of quality golfers right in front of your eyes. Bring it on.
They're changing it next season. I believe they're going top 100. I don't know how that works in terms of playing privileges. Need to read into this. But in terms of the FedEx Cup, it's top 100, and they're playing it over three events.
I think that makes sense.
I think four is maybe a little long-winded.
Well, when you see year after year, the big guys are able to skip one event and still be fine to get into the Tour Championship. So I think by reducing it to three makes an awful lot of sense, and it probably condenses the excitement of it a bit. As well, that's what I'm thinking it'll do, rather than spread it out so much over the four events. So it'll be a bit more bang, 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 and it might generate a bit more enthusiasm and buzz for it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how it rolls. But in the meantime, we've got we've got the FedEx for this year with four really good golf courses ahead of us, which is just makes it extra kind of extra exciting.
They are some fantastic courses, and this one's an absolute beaut. You know, rich Ridgewood. I can remember it from 2014 because I tipped up Mahan at 50s, and he brought home the bacon. And it reminds me. I say this far too often, but it's kind of Wentworthy. And if I could have got any kind of price on Francesco Molinari, I'd have been very interested in him this week. Because I think, when you look at 08, you look at 2010 that they played the Barclays here. Don't forget, listeners, this tournament used to be the Barclays, but of course now it's the Northern Trust Open. So when you're looking, just to confirm, Barry, next year the playoffs are the Liberty National Northern Trust. They then go to the BMW Championship at Medina, which we know all about, and then it ends at Eastlake. So again. That's your three tournaments next year in terms of the FedEx Cup. They've clearly booted Boston into touch, which is a bit of a shame because I quite like that tournament. But I can kind of understand why.
They're going to do a bit of rotation, though, and bring Boston back in at some stage.
Ah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. So actually, you're still going to have four tournaments, but they're just going to have a rota system.
Three events.
There's going to be three events building up to the Tour Championship, and they're going to rotate two out of three each year. That's good. I like that. It's an interesting scenario I always find with this. I think a lot of players try and pace themselves. I mean, Rory McIlroy and Ricky Fowler aren't even playing, as you were saying. And I know that in Sergio's original schedule, he was only going to play... I think he was going to give this one a miss, and then he was going to start in Boston, but clearly he hasn't even qualified, so he can't do that. And you do get that scenario in a few circumstances with these top players. But I think one of the things I always look at here is FedEx Cup position entering the tournament, because I think there's something in that. If you look at last year, it was a fight out. It was a fight at, I'm trying to remember where they played it. Was it Glen Oaks? Yeah, it was Glen Oaks, wasn't it? There was a fight between Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth for the victory. They were ranked 4 and 3 in the FedEx Cup playoffs entering. Reed was 7th in 2016 when he won at Bethpage, but really he was fighting tooth and nail to get the last automatic spot for the Ryder Cup. There's an element of that in this as well, I always think. Jason Day was 2nd in the FedEx Cup in 2015 when he came 2 weeks after winning the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits and won this. And we know with Jason Day, he is that kind of sort, isn't he? When he's at the very top of his game, win, win, that's not an issue for him. But then you go back to the likes of 2014. Hunter Mahan was 62nd in the FedEx Cup when he won this. Adam Scott was 11th in 2013. And Nick Watney was 49th at Bethpage. So you have scenarios where quality players are outside the top 30 and know that they need to perform well in this first tournament. And I expect some of the better guys are also pacing themselves for further on. So there's that angle, or there's also the angle of if you want to pick someone in the top 5 of the FedEx Cup or top 6 of the FedEx Cup already, and you know they're going to start real hot, that's another angle. But of course, when you're choosing those players, you know that you're going to get particularly short odds. Although that isn't actually the case this year for one player, and I don't know if he interests you. You've got Dustin Johnson at 1, Justin Thomas at 2, Brooks Koepka at 3. Did you like that,
Ben? Oh, Koepka. Nailed it.
Thank you. Justin Rose at 4. Bubba Watson at 5 with Jason Day in 6th place. And when I look at the current betting, I'm seeing our friend Bubba Watson at Unibet, 6 places each way of 50 odds, at 80 to 1 on Bubba. That's a tempting price.
That's insane.
That's an... We say it, don't we? We say it tournament in, tournament out with Bubba. Some of the pricing. I mean, he's generally 66s for this. Now, Ridgewood. As we do, we know plenty about the course. It is a real classical golf course. They have extended it since 2014. They have added 66 yards to the course. So it's a 7,385-yard par 71 golf course. So that's an angle that we need to look at. It features, and now I have this on very good authority. This isn't from any American fantasy sports website. I put that in there. This is actually from Todd Reich, who I emailed yesterday to say, what is your course makeup? And Todd kindly came back to me on an email this morning, telling me the following details. The greens are 90% poana. The rest is bent grass. So we're looking at 90% poana and 10% bent grass. So effectively, they're almost pure poana. And a lot of players won't like that. I'll give you an example, and this might bite me on the bum, but someone like Hideki Matsuyama will struggle on pure poa greens. He does not like them. The average size of these greens have also increased because they've done a renovation since 2014, which involves, I'm trying to find it, a well-known current course designer. Yeah, Gil Hans. And they're basically trying to pull the golf course back to how Tillinghast. It's a Tillinghast golf course. They're trying to pull it back to how he built it back in 1929. So they've actually added, I think there's something like 15,000 square feet of greens have been reconstituted. But even so, the greens are quite small at 5,600 square feet average. So this part of New Jersey has had tons and tons and tons and tons of rain in the build-up. So I think this is going to play very, very soft. I would not be surprised if it's a Belle Reve type softness in terms of the golf course. And there is also an 80% chance of more rain on Wednesday. So I think this is going to be a golf course where you're not going to get a lot of run on the fairways. And I think they're going to have stimp kind of levels where they would prefer it around about 12 on the stimp. You might be something around about 10 and a half, 11 when they're starting this on Thursday. But even so, Ridgewood Country Club, when you look at the previous winners here, Hunter Mahan, you look at Matt Kuchar, and you just look at the statistics of people that have featured around here. I don't think, and this is my view, I might be completely wrong, you might have a different view as well, Barry, I don't think this is a golf course that can be overpowered. I think this is a golf course that's got plenty, you know, it's tree lined, it's old style, it's classical, it's pretty thin off the tee. It's 31 yards wide, the fairways, and then at 300 yards, or 325, they go to 27 yards wide. So the fairways thin up further to the hole you get. And I just think it isn't the kind of golf course which will tolerate indiscriminate bombing. I think the rough is going to be very, very lush. It was lush here in 2014. And with all of this rain, you can expect the rough to be A, very wet, B, very lush. And I just get the feeling, for me, I think you're looking for a player that's hitting lots of greens at the moment and has a good all-round game. So the all-round stats from the PGA Tour, from the PGA Championship are something I took quite a keen eye in. Also, you know, ball striking, strokes gained, tee to green, those kind of stats. If you look at the golf course as well, and this again, for me, takes me away from real pure bombers. If you look at the golf course, it's got three par fives that are beastly. Two of them are over 600 yards. And I think in 2014, they played... Let me dig that number out. They played as the seventh hardest set of par fives on the PGA Tour in 2014. And this is always a number I tend to look at, the going for the green number. And in terms of going for the green and making a birdie or better, this golf course was the hardest on the PGA Tour in 2014 to be aggressive and make birdie. So that shouts to me, actually, this is far more this week about course management.
So somebody's going to Zach Johnson this to death, are they?
Potentially. I think it's going to be far more about course management. I think it's going to be far more about strategy off the tee rather than bombing that we saw 2 weeks ago at the PGA Championship. I think you're going to need to have some level of accuracy off the tee, and then it's going to be about brilliant approach play. And this is where it gets kind of tricky. You and I are looking for players that are very, very comfortable on Poana greens. And when I say Poana, I mean pure Poa greens. So Pebble Beach, the likes of Torrey Pines. Even Glen Oaks last year was pure Poa. Somewhere like Oakmont. You know, these kind of courses that are either pure Poana or predominant Poana rather than the mix of bent and Poana that you get on quite a few golf courses. That's where I'm at with it. I think a Zach Johnson sort could do well. You know, Matt Kuchar isn't the longest off the tee, is he? Hunter Mahan isn't exactly an indiscriminate bomber, but what both had when they came into this, they played very well at the PGA Championship and they were both ranked very well for greens in regulation at the PGA Championship, but also for ball striking and tee to green. And if you look at Kuchar, I mean, back in 2010, he hadn't won a big tournament at all. So, you know, there could be, you could get a scenario where someone a little bit down the pecking order gets the job done this week. Just in terms of winning prices, DJ was 14-1 last year, different golf course. Patrick Reed was a juicy 50-1 in 2016. Jason Day was 10-1. But Hunter Mahan was 50-1. Adam Scott was 16s. Nick Watney in 2012 was 70-1. The average for this since 2010 is 36-1. Past four renewals, it's 31-1. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Now, I'm going to throw this over to you. Who are guys in this kind of major championship depth field that you've got a very good handle on this week that you fancy?
The $64,000 question.
I've gone for four in my preview, which was released about 45 minutes ago, but you crack on.
Yeah, I'm kind of catching myself up a little bit in terms of research, but, you know,
I'll put you on the
spot.
Yeah,
thanks a million for that. Do you know what? Somebody who actually has just kind of been jumping off the sheet of me and probably, yeah, he's had a good season, but probably wants a to get a proper win to really stamp his name up there with the in the limelight would be Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah,
you know, he is he's more than long enough to give himself options off the tee with hitting lesser clubs than driver to plot his way around the place. When he's firing his irons right, the things are just lasers and just don't leave the pin at all. So yeah, that's 40-1 is a nice enough, interesting price on him.
There is that Ryder Cup angle. There is that Ryder Cup angle of guys that are either, I mean, they've changed the setup, haven't they, this year, where effectively the autos are already locked. But there were scenarios where Reed was 8th out of 8 of the autos and he grabbed the spot. Watney was white, was outside trying to force his way into the team, as was Mahan. I can see Cantlay. He's okay on Poana as well. Because he's a California lad, isn't he?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's it. There's one. How about you go for one more and I'll see what I can get in the background of my brain. Somebody else pop in there.
You and I off... I don't know if we've... I know we kind of mentioned this in the podcast last week, didn't we? We said that there were three players at the moment who we think are going to have a good FedEx Cup playoffs. One of them was Jason Day. Yeah. Who has a good record around here. I just don't see him hitting enough fairways and greens for where you'd want him to be. Because when he finished second here in 20, he finished in the top five in 2014. I think this is a less than driver golf course for a lot of the players. Now, and as we know, just because it's a less than driver golf course doesn't mean a lot of these bombers don't indiscriminately use the driver. And that's the kind of fact that puts me off John Rahm, for example, who we know tends to turn up at every golf course and just hammer driver everywhere. I'm not sure that that's going to work around here. The two other players that you and I mentioned last week in the podcast that we thought were going to have excellent playoffs were Tiger Woods and Jordan Spieth. And I've gone for both this week. I'm going 16-1 on Tiger Woods, 2.5 points each way, and I'm going 2 points at 25-1 with Unibet, 6 places each way at 50 odds on Jordan Spieth. I just think with Woods, he played here 2010, didn't play here in 2014, and 2010 was when he was going through the divorce, and he wasn't playing particularly great. It was a typical Tiger Woods at the time schedule, which was very light. And he wasn't playing great. 28th at the PGA Championship, he turned up here. And he was absolutely all over the place from tee to green. Came here. The golf course was soft. He liked the golf course. He mentioned that before the tournament started. And he said that he liked it because it was classical. It was old style. And you needed course... you needed course management to thrive around here. Went out there, and in the first round, he shot 6 under 65 to lead after round one. He had that season he was struggling with the putter. He struggled with the putter Friday and Saturday. He then he regained some decent putting on the Sunday. I think he finished 12th in the end. Shot 4 under 67 to finish 12th on the Sunday. I just get the feeling with Woods, I know it's not overly original as a tip, but if there's a player that's carrying momentum, if there's a player that's carrying confidence, and if there's a player that was at Bellerive and suddenly realised with that fist pump on the 18th that he could win major championships and he could compete at the very highest level, it was Tiger Woods. And I just think, and I put this in my commentary, if you look at where, you know, we're stating the obvious here, but an 8-time winner at Firestone on bent Poana mixed greens, 8 times winner at Torrey Pines on pure Poana greens, 3 wins at Warwick Hills, bent Poa, 2 wins at Pebble Beach. He just likes playing on Poana, and he's just playing some great golf right now. And I think that this golf course will allow him to be more of a pragmatist. And as he said, I don't think it's the kind of course where Koepka's going to be able to blow people away by hitting it 340 yards down the middle of every fairway this week. And that, to me, brings Tiger Woods into the mix. And if Tiger doesn't win this week, for me, it's the BMW Championship in a couple of weeks at Aronimink, where I would put him up again.
Yeah.
Because we were having this discussion. Classical golf course, less than driver. I don't think the Bombers are going to be able to get to the par fives predominantly this week, even the Bombers. And that, again, I think just brings Woods into the mix, because it's going to be more about par four scoring this week than par five scoring. And I just think that if you're going to take one of the players who was exceptional at the PGA Championship, it's Tiger. So I'm on board.
There's no way I'm disagreeing with that pick at all. He wasn't supposed to... You know, Bellerive shouldn't have been a super fit for his game, but he ends up being right there, right at the end. This is even more suitable to his current skill set. So yeah. I think that's a...
He's going to be able to use a lot of three woods, yeah. Barry, and a lot of two irons.
And that, which means he's not bringing out that crazy lashing swing he has with his driver, which plays right into his wheelhouse. I think 16-1 is a nice price.
I didn't think it was too bad. I thought it would be closer to 12s and 14s. The other one is Jordan Spieth. That's kind of... Spieth had a terrible year, isn't he? But he was second at the PGA for strokes gained putting.
Yeah.
And it was his best putting performance since he finished second to Dustin Johnson at this tournament 12 months ago to the day.
It's been so obvious that putter's been coming back the last... say 6-8 weeks. You can just see it, and you know something's bubbling underneath. And we were saying it last week, and I'm going to say it again, I think he wins one of these four events.
Do you know where he is in the FedEx Cup rank?
I kind of have him in my head for winning the Tour Championship, just waiting until the final and then just booming it. He's
43rd in the FedEx Cup rankings. Okay. So if he had a disaster, he's not getting to the Tour Championship. So that's a motivated golfer right there, yeah, isn't it?
For sure. It's like we said, it's...
Listen to this. This is his numbers this season. 140th in strokes gained putting, 80th in putting average, and 131st in three-putt avoidance. Last year, he was 42nd in strokes gained putting, second in putting average, and seventh in three-putt avoidance.
I'd love to hear his those stats with a bit of recency bias, though, for this, you know, say the last 6-8 weeks, and see where he's come in those rankings for putting. I'd say it's like chalk and cheese.
Well, I can tell you his putting average. He was ninth at the PGA Championship for putting average, and he was second for strokes gained putting. And he said afterwards, that is my best putting that I can remember. And if we're on a golf course, it's all about course management. It's not about indiscriminate power and bombing. I think Spieth's right in the mix. He's won the John Deere Classic twice. He won the Travelers last year. And I always had him down as a pure Poana Green putter. But of late, first at Pebble Beach, second at TPC River Highlands, which is a mix of bent grass and Poana, and second at this tournament last year when it was played at Glen Oaks, which again were pure Poana Greens. They were all last year, first and second. So again, that 25-1 is only hanging at Unibet. I just think that's a very, very good price on Spieth. He's as short as 16-1 with a couple of firms.
That'll work. That's an amazing differential, isn't it?
Yeah. 18-1 with Bet365 right now and 25-1 with Unibet. So I just couldn't resist the price. And he was in my mind. He's been in my mind for this when we were actually watching the PGA Championship 2 weeks ago. Because as you said, we know it's coming. And I always like it. I don't know if you're the same. I like to see players who have been struggling, when they find their key skill set, which is their strength, when they find that it's time to press the go button, and when he's starting to find the putter after, for whatever reason, changing his putting stroke at the end of last year, for me, when he's got confidence in that putter, the rest of the game will follow.
Yeah.
And actually, if you take away the first round last year, alas, at the PGA Championship, he was actually sixth across the final three rounds. And I think he hit 77.8% of greens in regulation across Friday, Saturday and Sunday. So he is hitting greens, and that putting as well. I can't see him not being a feature this week.
You wonder whether there's a little added on side bet you can do, put him on for first round leader. So you know the way you'll go out at Augusta on fire and grab that first round leader. Mm.
That's my only reservation with both of those. They've been starting tournaments badly, haven't they? Both him and Woods. But around here, I don't think it's the kind of tournament or winning score where even if you start with a kind of 71 or 70, you're not going to be out of the tournament. Mm. You know, it isn't like a Wyndham Classic or Wyndham Championship where Branch Snooker shoots 59.
Yeah, that's...
And then you're snookered from Thursday onwards because you shot 70.
Yes, nobody's going to shoot 59 here this week.
Nah, it's not going to happen. My third tip is Adam Scott. I mean, that's fairly obvious. Played some outstanding stuff. Again, we can talk about the belly putter. There's nothing wrong with it at the end of the day. Everything's legal above board. But he has found some putting strength. And as we've always said all through the year, when Adam Scott actually starts to putt half decent, the rest of his game is so good. He's going to be a feature. He's got a good record at the Barclays. He won it in 2013 when they played it at Liberty National. And again, I do like Scott on the basis that actually, if you look at his FedEx Cup ranking at the moment, I think he's something like 51st. He needs...
He's 73rd.
Yeah, well, there you go, 73rd. He needs to continue playing straight away. He can't, you know, if he had a bad week this week, all of a sudden, again, it's gun against head at TPC Boston next week for him to qualify even for the BMW. And this is what I liked about him, what he said at the end of the PGA. He said, there's always things to work on when you're not the winner, I think. I certainly want to keep improving. I take satisfaction from the way I contended here at this major after a few years without contending in majors. I'd like to play really well in the next few weeks in the playoffs and try to make a run all the way through and then take some satisfaction out of this year. That to me shouts player that's motivated, player that's going to suit the golf course, and a point each way at 45-1. I've gone with him 7 places each way at 50 odds. And I know, and I'm going to leave this one for you, you and I are on the same player, a bit of a bigger price.
He's an almost hero to us, or to me anyway, at the moment.
He's an auto bet for you these days.
Well, he is, but it's because he's begging to be backed. You know, his long game's been very good. He showed up well at the PGA. He didn't wilt, which He's had a tendency in his career to wilt when he's been in those situations. Now, unfortunately, we didn't get to see him play on Sunday because he was playing beside Tiger Woods, and they were showing literally every single thing Tiger did. But you know, he showed up for me and got a full place payout. He's been doing, like, as you pointed out, he's been doing all the right things to take his game really seriously and try to bring it to the next level. You know,
yeah. He's hired Phil Kenyon for the putting. He did this at Carnoustie. Hired Phil Kenyon for his putting and Pete Cowan for his short game. So he clearly knows where his weaknesses
are. Yeah, and we know his long game is not a big issue. Like,
it's world class, isn't it?
Phenomenal. So, though, this is a guy who's really just, you know, maybe he's decided, okay, enough already. He's not ditching Butch, obviously, but he goes, I've got to this stage with my natural talent. Maybe it's now time for me to really take it seriously and fine tune the things and kick on. So that's somebody who's definitely worth the bet and continuing to back for me. And you know, I'll be happy to celebrate the win with you.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what though? You look at Kujar, you look at Mahan. No, I'd kind of, this might be, is it, I kind of put Woodland in that kind of, if you're looking back at them where they were in their careers at those points, I mean, yeah, okay, Mahan had won WGCs, I know that, Kuchar hadn't though in 2010, I think Woodland would be, if he popped up and won at 66-1, it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world. And when you look at his form across this Barclays stroke Northern Trust Open tournament, 13th at Playfield in 2011, 2nd at Liberty National in 2013, 13th here at Ridgewood in 2014, and he was 4th at Bethpage Black 2 years ago. And we know Bethpage Black, that's where the PGA Championship is next year. It's hosted US Opens, it's a real tough Tillinghast golf course, which features pure Poana greens. He likes playing in the metropolitan area around New York. And I just think that, you know, the way that his long game is, he's long, but he hits tons of fairways. He grinds out lots of greens in regulation. His ball striking was outstanding at the PGA Championship. He was 4th for ball striking that week. And he was also 10th for strokes gained tee to green. Again, nice statistic. It just all kind of points the fact that he's still under Butch and Claude Harmon, still works with them on the, you know, on the main parts of his game. But now that he's got that expertise from a short game perspective, you know, it's all pointing in a very good direction, isn't it?
Yeah, well, let's not say expertise. He's only just been at it a few weeks, but I'm sure he's getting confidence immediately from somebody as world renowned as Pete Cowan. So, and he's also sitting 33rd in the FedEx Cup standings. So he's got that little kind of motivation to just bump himself up there and get all the way into that top 30 to play in the Tour Championship in Eastlake.
Do you expect Xander to go well this week? Bearing in mind this Ryder Cup scenario.
I'm finding Xander difficult to call when he goes well and doesn't go well. I thought he'd go much better at the PGA Championship, especially after his performance in the Open, and just kind of disappointed, to be honest. He's going to have to show up to really make sure. He should be a captain's pick, but
we know that Woods is a captain pick. We know that Mickelson's a captain pick. There's lots of rumours that you can read all over the internet that DeChambeau's going to be a captain's pick.
So they're playing for one spot. So
they're playing for one spot. And that show is Xander, Tony Finau, Patrick Cantlay. You could throw Brant Snedeker in the mix. Yeah. You can throw anyone that finds form right now in the mix.
Yeah,
Into that pot. You could even throw Gary Woodland into that mix if he has a fantastic next couple of weeks.
I wonder if that last spot is reserved in Furyk's mind for who is the hottest in these FedEx Cup playoffs.
You've hit that bang on the nail, haven't you? You know for a fact that after Boston, for his first three, he's going to say Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, and if everything's to be believed, Bryson DeChambeau. He then has the additional BMW championship at Eronomink to select the last of the three, of the four.
I think it could be a case of...
So it's going to be hot form.
It doesn't matter what you've done at all, where you are in the standings. It could be who gets hottest, who does the Ryan Moore thing, or the alternate universe where the picks were actually done at the right time, and the Billy Horschel run, you know, 2-1-2, or was it, or 1-2-1 he went. That could well be the strategy. And nobody could say anything against it, because you want somebody who's playing really hot golf going into the Ryder Cup.
And you think that could be Patrick Cantlay?
It could be Patrick Cantlay. It could be any one of a number of guys. Somebody could just pop up here and get really hot for the next 2-3 weeks, and force Furyk's hand.
Yeah, it is wide open, isn't it?
Be interesting.
That fourth spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be exciting to see a few of these guys if they really get in the hunt. For the next couple of weeks, you know, you'll see it on their faces. They'll know.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. You know, if any of the 24 players that make either team this year, it's the same every year, isn't it? But they've really earned their spots, because it's been a very, very, very competitive qualification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that just adds more excitement to the whole event. You know,
I've won outsider. And I'm going to back him because of the maturity he showed yesterday in how he dealt with that disappointment of blasting the driver right on 18. I'm going to back CT Pan. Stats were good last week. They were really good. He was tied second strokes gained. He's first in strokes gained tee to green. Putting is not going to be a massive issue this week because the greens are tiny. So if you can get onto the greens... you're in business. And he was tied 14th for greens in regulation. He's 150-1, and that's a fun price.
Huge price.
Yeah. Or 125-1 if you want to get eight places, which I might actually do that. Give myself the extra little cushion.
He's a quality player, isn't he? I do think, and I think you hit the nail earlier in the show, when you're talking... this kind of fall series as we know it, or the start of next season in the autumn, you can see Pan popping up, can't you?
Yeah.
Maybe even over in Asia, you know, one of the, you know, the KJ Cup, or, you know, that CIMB Classic they play in Malaysia, somewhere like that.
Yeah, it's more a bet to kind of, I don't know, in support of how, of his attitude to it last week. But, you know, he's clearly swinging the club brilliantly at the moment. And, you know, if he nabs me a place, I'll be getting 25-1, you know, for the place. So that's fun. Yeah, you know, it's a fun bet to have.
There's going to be someone from that kind of range that definitely gets right into the mix, undoubtedly. I tell you what I noticed. If you want a player, and I know this goes against what I say, but there's a definite link between this golf course, Ridgewood, and the Golf Club of Houston. Because if you look at previous winners here, Kuchar's played well at Houston. Hunter Mahan won at Houston. Stuart Appleby came second here in 2014. He's won and finished second at Houston. Vijay Singh won this in 2008. He's won three times in Houston. One name that kind of jumps off the list for me at a bigger price is Luke List, who played well at the Open Championship, or was it the Scottish Open, or both. But he's played very well in Houston. We know that he's also done well at Torrey Pines in the past, on Poana. I'm seeing up to 125-1 on Luke List, or even 140-1 with Bet365. So, you know, there's something in that. If you can find a player that's played very well at Houston and you can throw in some decent Poana putting across Pebble or across Torrey Pines or some of these New York type golf courses, don't hesitate in backing them. That's my advice. The other one that I was kind of tempted with, couldn't squeeze him in, is Tyrrell Hatton. Because he played well at the PGA Championship, didn't
he? That's so interesting. He was kind of sitting there on... I do a one and done, so he's kind of sitting there as one of the higher ranked players I've left, and I popped him down for this. But, you know, he's He's his greens and regulation stats are really good at the moment in recent times.
Absolutely. I understand that he was first for greens in regular at the PGA Championship.
That's the kind of stat you can get on. I saw he was there around the place at 80-1.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's
and you know what we said about this looking like almost like a classical European style golf course. Yeah, you could almost picture it. I know it's not going to be as easier, but you could see it being one of these kind of Italian golf courses. You know, around Milan, tree line fairly tight. He's 92nd in the FedEx Cup playoffs, as you would expect. He hasn't played a lot of golf. So if he wants to do anything in the States before he goes to the Ryder Cup, he needs to do something quite soon. Because theoretically, he could actually get booted out this week at 92, couldn't he? If 8 managed to get out above him. It's a bit of a long shot. But if he doesn't play well this week, all of a sudden he's literally on the bubble when they get to Boston next week. Yeah, he was second for greens in. He was first for greens in regulation last at the PGA Championship, and he was also fourth for strokes gained tee to green.
And for somebody who's not immensely long on a course that was playing with that length,
yeah,
interesting.
And didn't he finish? He was in the top 10, wasn't he, at that Tillinghast PGA Championship they played that Jimmy Walker won at Balters Roll, and didn't he finish in the top 6 at Shinnecock? So he likes playing in this New York area. So do you know what? I can't include him on my tips, but I'm actually going to have a personal bet on Tyrrell Hatton at 80-1 with Paddy Power.
I think I'm sold.
I'm sold.
Yeah. That might be it, yeah.
That's us, I think. But yeah, Tyrrell Hatton, he's been nagging away at me. I just didn't put him in there. I went for Woodland instead. But because I don't know how, if you look at some of the, even though these talented elite players from the Europe, these FedEx Cup playoffs, they've got a different vibe to them. And you don't know how they're going to quite react. That was one of the downsides with Hatton, because this is his first FedEx Cup playoffs. I think it's the same also with Tommy Fleetwood. Now, they might thrive in it. They might not. You don't know. It's a new experience for them.
Yeah.
But I could see Hatton having a good week.
I think they'll both embrace the playoffs, you know, in their own, you know, in the way that their personality will kind of adjust. You know, Tommy just seems to take everything in his stride. And Tyrrell Hatton will probably, you know, kind of love the challenge of it and kind of just dig the heels in like he seems to with his grit and determination. And, you know, that kind of New Jersey, that kind of crowd could be boisterous, you know.
He'll like that. And we know that, you know, on this golf course that can't be overpowered like Belle Reve, I think he's a good shout at 80s.
Yeah, I mean, definitely worth the punt. I mean, sometimes you never know what Tyrrell's going to show up, but he's been really solid recently, so you'll find there's a lot worse bets out there, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your time tonight, Barry. As always, much, much appreciated. I hope you enjoy the golf across the next few days. And thanks to listeners. It's been a pleasure, as always. It was great to get Paul across from Guernsey. Barry over in Dublin, so it's an international feel. We're coming from all three corners of the United Kingdom and Ireland for this podcast this week. Thank you to everyone for listening. As I say at the top of the show, if you could subscribe, follow us, and just share the word about the Golf Betting System podcast, it'd be much appreciated. Thanks for your time. We will see you again next week. Goodbye.